Hi everyone, just a quick message for this episode. If you're seeing this episode in your podcast feed for the second time, it's because this is a re-upload from earlier this year. There were some back-end changes in the hosting sites, so I had to re-upload this episode, which was originally recorded and posted earlier in the spring this year. But with that being said, let's get on to the episode. Hello and welcome to the Allegro Podcast. In this episode, I talked to Henry Nguyen. Henry is a professional runner for the Brooks Beasts. As a student athlete at the University of Virginia, Henry won an NCAA championship title in the mile. As a professional athlete, he's had many incredible performances thus far, including his 351 mile race. In this episode, we talk about Henry's running journey, some of the behind the scenes of being a professional runner, training, mindset, and much more. I hope you enjoy this episode. Allegro. All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Henry. To start off this episode, can you please introduce yourself and talk a little bit about how you started your running journey?
For sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I'm Henry Nguyen, member of the Brooks Beast team out in Seattle right now. NCAA champion while at Virginia, 351 miler. So a little background on me there. I never really saw myself as being a professional runner, if I'm being honest. I started off my career as a lacrosse player in high school, and my lacrosse coach and my track coach were good friends, and so I had the option to do cross country or lift weights during the fall, and I said, all right, maybe doing cross country will be a little bit easier, and that's kind of how I started my entire career. And from then on out, lacrosse fell to the wayside because I wasn't so good, and I ended up being good at track. And I actually did show up to practice the first day of lacrosse sophomore year, and I got kicked off the team because they had conspired against me to make me a full-time track athlete.
Yeah. I'm curious now, looking back, do you think the lifting would have been easier or harder than the cross-country, all the running?
Oh, my gosh. So much easier. Like, I have no idea what I was thinking going for cross-country, but a lot of my friends were doing it, and so honestly, my freshman year of high school, it wasn't so much running. It was like we'd run to the country store and get like snacks and things like that. And our high school did something. We'd pool hop because there was a bunch of pools around our school. And so like we'd go for a run, jump in there, run back. So it was we were messing around a bit, not really training too hard.
Yeah. Yeah. So from then, like from those first moments you started running to present day, what would you consider your greatest running accomplishment?
I would say for me, I think winning NCAAs was one of my best accomplishments. It's like, it's always, you know, great to win a huge race like that. And I remember I went into that one, not really ranked the highest, but super confident, told my coach, like, the goal is to win. And so, you know, to get an NCAA title, not everybody can say that. And it was with a lot of great runners in the race. And so I'm really proud of that one.
Yeah. Was that, cause I'm trying to think, I feel like that race was before I like really got into running and becoming like a track fan. Was that at Birmingham?
That was, yeah, where they're doing NCAAs this year. So they pretty much ran the exact same race of how I won. It's almost the exact same time, same tactics. So it was cool to watch.
Yeah, I think I was listening to an interview today. It was like a Let's Run interview. And it was like John Galt, who I had on the podcast a few episodes ago, he was like, that track's like a 406, 407 track because like times always around there.
It's funny. Yeah, that's – that's just championship racing because everybody believes in their kick, obviously. They're just kind of fighting for position. So it was kind of funny to see almost the exact same time and same race happen, but just a few years later.
Yeah. Those championship races are exciting though. And yeah, we'll get more into like racing and all that in a little later in the episode, but yeah, super exciting stuff. Would you say that NCAA meet was your favorite like meet experience overall? Because I know like, I mean, having like a favorite race and favorite meet sometimes different, like the whole experience of a meet could for example, like trials, I know they put on like a huge thing, like the whole week is centered around that. What would you say your favorite like meet overall is?
Yeah, like you said, trials, obviously that's a crazy experience. This year was my first time going to that, and you know, it's really an exciting atmosphere because everybody's out there, everybody's excited. There's an Olympic team on the line. But it's not really, that might not even be my favorite race. Some of my favorite races are just like even more low key ones. Like I love going to BU and running on that track. And I remember that one always because it's such an electric facility. Like, there's so many people in it. It's so packed, and like, people are banging on the track. And so, you know, it really gets you pumped up. I went to a race in Berlin. There was like a huge, we were at the Berlin Olympic Stadium. So that was a crazy experience. Really, I mean, the Olympic trials definitely has to be up there, but there's a lot of races that have stuck in my mind for various reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, I talk about this a lot, but the indoor races are always so hype. Like, I've been to the Armory. I went to, like, Millrose a few times just to watch, but it's crazy how loud it gets and how, like, everyone's such a track fan. And I'm sure, like, overseas, too, when you're in, like, Berlin, like, I've heard a lot of times, like, whenever people go, like, when they travel to other countries, like, a lot of the fans there are huge, like, running nerds, which is cool.
I know. It's cool to see because in the U.S., you might not think of track as like the biggest sport, and you know, some of the races we go to don't have packed stands, but then you go to a race overseas and there can be 40,000 plus people in a race, and it's like, all right, this is a big sport over here. This is cool.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, what's the case? Like, I know there's a huge movement, obviously, like in the U.S. to try to like grow the sport and everything, and I think like the media and everyone is doing a great job with that. But I'm trying to think, like, what can we do more? Because like, it's crazy how popular like the Diamond League stadiums get, like they get so packed and loud. It's interesting. I'll probably look more into that. Like,
yeah, I think if you talk to any pro, if you have any other pro runner on your podcast, like we'll all have similar ideas for what needs to be done to make track a little more user friendly, I guess you could say, like a little more exciting. Track meets, I mean, you run track and most people listen to this probably do. Nothing's more boring than sitting at a track meet in between races where there's no music in the stands. There's nothing going on. There's like no hype at all. So I think if they really wanted to make track into a big spectator sport, you need to fill up the downtime. You need to like have music playing. You need to, you know, make the races more condensed. Instead of having a 6-hour meet, have an hour meet where races are just like stacked on top of each other. So there's really no downtime and there's just like excitement because, you know, nobody really wants to sit a race for 6 hours waiting for somebody to go.
Yeah, I will say Millrose was like that. It was just like event after event after event. And I had Luke Warhurst on, like a very nice track club, 2 weeks ago. And he was talking about like he's big into motorsports. And like one thing motorsports is doing right is like they treat the meets like festivals. And like they really make it a whole experience rather than just like waiting for like the heats to go and everything. Like they make it very like jam-packed, I guess you could say. I personally think the running itself is exciting, but it's interesting how we could make the sport like more popular. That's a very
the races are always exciting, and like you can have a non-track fan go to a track meet and they'll be pumped watching somebody run fast because it just looks amazing. It's you know, from the 100 meter sprint whatever to the 10K, people are doing something crazy. I mean, they're running so fast, it's impressive. So when you actually break it down, the event is fun, but like the surrounding bubble of the event is boring. I have my, you know, maybe a later goal in life is like starting a track league, but I want it to be just indoors. So like I went to a Kraken, Seattle Kraken hockey game, and the games are a couple hours long, but like there's not a moment where there's not music playing, there's not a light show going. And I think you could do a track meet like that where maybe it's 2 hours, but the stadium's packed, there's music playing, all this fun stuff, there's concessions, and I think people would enjoy that.
Totally, totally, yeah. That it's just very, very interesting to think about. And yeah, I watch like some UFC stuff on YouTube and everything, and just it's cool to see what every sport is doing and how we can incorporate that into running.
Yeah, track needs to catch up a little bit with that.
yeah, for sure, for sure. So transitioning to another topic, we got college. You ran at UVA, which is, I'd say, like in terms of distance running, pretty powerhouse. A lot of like currently in high school, a lot of like the fastest guys are committing there. And I'm sure in your time too is very, very good with Coach Pete Watson. So what led you to actually signing with Virginia?
Yeah, so my process was a little strange because I didn't really have anybody on my high school team who had gone to the Division I before me, so I was a bit on my own. I did the official visits. I talked to the coaches, and really what got me was the team itself at UVA, where I just felt like it was more of a family, a little more cohesive than the other programs I saw. There was a few older guys from Connecticut that I knew had gone there and from the New England region, like Connor Rogg and Mike Marcella. So I knew Pete Watson was a great coach. I knew there was the team was stacked. And when I visited, we just had a good time. And it really, you know, cemented the fact that I wanted to go there.
Yeah, definitely. I've heard so many people talk about like just having that feeling when you go on like those visits, which is cool.
Yeah, it's hard to describe, but it's like, you know, when you mix with a good group of people. And so that was actually my fourth visit. And I had one more left. And I told my parents when I got home, I'm like, I don't even think I need to go on this last one. But obviously, I had already committed, so I needed to go. But I was pretty set on UVA the second I left there.
Yeah, yeah. What type of like program would you say UVA is? Because I know like a lot of schools speed based, but I feel like I remember hearing in a podcast like, or maybe a UT video that like UVA, like the people there are strong, like like you can expect some really fast like tempos and like just a lot of strength work. How would you describe it?
Yeah, when so Pete Watson was there while I was coaching, while I was there, he was the coach, and it was definitely a strength-based program. Like we did some crazy workouts, like a lot of mileage, a lot of hard tempos. Like a consistent thing in our schedule would be on Mondays we would do like a 5 mile tempo at 5 minute pace on the track, and then in the afternoon come back for interval workout. So there was a, you know, we definitely grinded while we were there, and I think it didn't work out for everybody, but it made a lot of people very strong. And so I really liked when I was there, because when I went to a race, I knew I had the speed, but then I also knew that I had the strength. So I really had the tools for whatever anybody threw at me. And he's now at University of Texas doing a great job. Their team won the DMR, so he's building a great program there.
Yeah, definitely. And that just reminds me, like, I remember watching your, like, Brooks, I forget what the actual title is, like the Brooks PR tip video. It was like a 10-second video, and you're like, looking back at the work that you've done, the hard work, and like, yeah, if you see all the aerobic stuff and the strength stuff, I'm sure that definitely gave you a lot of confidence going into your races.
For sure. I feel like even I joke around with some of my teammates where my coach Danny Mackey right now is, I would say he has a much different training approach where it's not always super hard, but it's very it's very thoughtful in the training. Like he's working specific systems of the body. And so when I came from UVA to this program, a lot of the workouts and the tempos got slower and easier. And I was like, okay, I can handle this. But then I've also PR'd by 7 seconds in the mile while I'm here. So he's doing something right.
Yeah. So yeah, talking about Coach Danny Mackey, with the Brooks Beast and everything, what attracted you there coming out of your collegiate career with the Brooks Beast specifically? Because there are so many, obviously so many professional track teams across the country. And I think even you were Melbourne Track Club reached out to you, so
yeah. So my senior year, I got injured. I had knee surgery, so there wasn't quite as many offers on the table as there might have been after winning NCAAs my junior year. So one of the big things was, you know, Danny was interested. I talked to Melbourne Track Club. I talked to a few other programs, and it's like, well, obviously Melbourne would have been cool to go to Australia, but that's a little bit far from home. And then with Danny, I really appreciated that he had a long-term goal in mind. Like he didn't just pick people straight out of college that were the best at the moment. He picked people that he saw potential in. And so I really appreciated the fact that, you know, maybe I was banged up my senior year, didn't run quite as fast as I probably should have or would have. And he saw me and he was like, okay, like this guy can be somebody. I know in the moment, maybe, you know, he has to get knee surgery, but then down the line, it's going to pay off. It was funny because apparently I didn't know this when I signed, but he didn't even tell the sports marketing department that I was getting knee surgery like 2 days after I signed. So they were a little bit surprised to hear that.
That's so cool though, that he saw that like vision, and that's really special to hear. So how's Seattle been? I know you guys train like primarily in Seattle and Albuquerque. I want to get into Albuquerque a little later, but how's Seattle as a training location? I know you're right by like the Brooks headquarters, which is really cool. How is it like to train there?
Seattle's great. I think it's got to be the nicest place that I've ever trained, just because purely based on the fact that there's so many different options of where to go. Like we have the Burke Gilman Trail, which is, I don't even know, like 50 miles of bike path. We have Green Lake, where I just worked out today, which is just like a 3 mile loop around the lake. You know, then there's all the places that we go for long runs that are a little bit of a drive. And so, you know, the weather out here, it gets rainy, but, you know, you can survive that. So it's nice that it doesn't get super cold, doesn't really snow. And then just the amount of choices that you have for training really helps, because it gets boring going to the same place every day.
yeah, definitely. Yeah, like I'm in New Jersey right now, and there are actually a lot of trails around, which is nice. Like our state cross country course is like 2 minutes away from me. And I know, like, I think where you're from in Connecticut's like an hour north of where I am. But super nice. And I'm sure it's interesting though, because like you hear all like Boulder, Boulder, Flagstaff, like Park City. But I mean, actually, those are just altitude places. But Seattle is a cool location. It's cool that like the Brooks Beast have like Seattle as their like. When you think of Seattle, you think of the Brooks Beast, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's our home. It's very cool having the headquarters here as well, because you know, we get to go in, like, unlike some other companies that are so massive, maybe, like, we go into the headquarters, like, the CEO knows us, so, like, we'll be getting lunch there, whatever, and he'll come and talk to us. Like, we know the head of our sports marketing team, like, we get lunch with them, we go down to their office, we chat with them. So it's really nice having that personal connection with the people who are in charge, and then even the people who make our spikes and who do our apparel, like we have meetings with them all the time to kind of better that stuff. So it's cool to be integrated into the company in that way.
Yeah, that was actually my next question. I was wondering, because I've heard so much about the culture at Brooks and how everyone like is just working together to innovate and like advance the company, run fast. And I heard in like the Sit and Kick podcast with Dave and Josh, and like you guys work very closely with like the engineers, the developers, and even like the executives. So can you talk a little bit more about like what your role as an athlete is, besides obviously running fast, like in working with the team to innovate and like just grow the sport, grow the brand, and like develop the best like shoe technology, etc. Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think our role really, I mean, we're kind of, they have wear testers, but we're like the elite wear tester, where if, you know, if we can pass a spike off or a shoe off and we say, okay, we can do anything we need to do in this, then I think it gives them a lot of confidence that anybody else will be able to use it for their normal runs or their daily workouts and things like that. So I think they appreciate having us around, because we really get to put the gear to the, you know, test it to the limit. And we're pretty honest with them in terms of our feedback. So it's cool, especially with the spikes, and you hear the, you know, a lot of talk about spikes in the last year. Like this year, Brooks has put a ton of money into making a huge department and like a special team to make our own, really competitive spike. And so those guys bring us in all the time. They have people come to our practices. They film us. We do like specific testing, and they just like, they're always asking us questions. So they just really want to nail that out. And then even like the apparel people or the normal shoe people, they like to talk to us too and just kind of, you know, pick our brains on how we think everything performs. So it's nice to give a little feedback, because I think we're probably some of the people that wear Brooks the most. And yeah, so it's nice to, you know, if we say something's great, then I think you can bank on it.
Yeah, that's really cool, especially that you guys have that like close access, and like since you're literally wearing the shoes to compete, and like you guys are able to give that like firsthand feedback to them and work closely with, that's really cool. Talking a little bit about the team itself, how do you say like the training environment is, because you have such a range of like people on the team, like Devin Dixon with the 400 800 speed, and yeah, then you guys have a bunch of milers and a bunch of strength people. So how is it like being in that like very like wide range training group, with a bunch of like hard workers and fast people?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, that was another reason why I chose Brooks, because it really felt like a college program, where, you know, maybe some of these other teams, they are technically a team, but they don't really get to meet that often, or they don't train together that often. With Brooks, I train with these guys 6 or 7 days a week. Like we really do see each other all the time. We put in the work, and it's cool to have people with so many different talents or different skill sets, where, you know, if I need to do a speed workout, I know Devin can kick my ass. Like, and if I need to do a distance workout, I know there's somebody else who can push me. So really you can bounce around, and I have my core training group of guys like Waleed, Isaac, Dave, Josh, who I really train out predominantly. And then I'm able to hop in with, you know, maybe Brandon or Isaiah or Devin for an 800 like specific workout to get the wheels going. So it's nice to know that no matter what you do, there's going to be somebody who like can really push you. And it's great having such a big team, just because it's fun to have people at practice and be around everybody.
Yeah, totally. And I know you guys like prioritize the culture a lot. I could be totally butchering the name, but I think it's called like the Wolf Award or something. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I mean, that's cool too, because it's like off the track stuff too. And I think that's important. Like you see a lot of the greatest teams in like the country, even at the high school level, like they prioritize team culture a lot. And it's not just getting the fastest people to run and train together. Just running. It's not all about like the splits and workouts. It's a lot of the stuff behind the scenes as well. And it's cool that like the Beasts are facilitating that.
Yeah, Danny, his big thing is like when he brings somebody in for a recruiting trip or whatever, like he gets our feedback. And so he's not going to overlook somebody's personality because they're like super fast. So he wants people that he can work with, that the team wants to work with, and that are talented. So it's cool to have that combination, because you know, we really do have to work together every day, and it's good to be able to show up to practice and not have drama and have people, you know, enjoy actually being there. It makes you faster for sure.
Yeah. I'm curious. Are you more of a, like a, what do you prefer? The speed workouts with like the 400, 800 guys, or more of like the 1500, 5K workouts, the aerobic stuff?
Well, I don't really get to do the 800 work too often. So I do like doing that. That's kind of where I started when I was in high school, but, I'm mostly doing the 15 work. I'm more of a speed guy. Like I like doing speed more. Obviously I have strength. Like today we did 7 by 5 minutes at like, so we're going like a little over a mile for those. So that's kind of like mile repeats. And I'm like, all right, that's good stuff. I know it definitely benefits, and it's not the most fun. It's a little bit brain dead. So I enjoy maybe the 400 repeats, the 300 repeats, really getting put on the spikes and get the wheels going.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a 12 by 200 workout today. And I got to put on the spikes after
That's
a while.
Nice.
And I personally prefer like the long stuff. Like whenever I get to do I'm trying to think, like 20 minute tempo, or like just like hammer a 14 mile long run or something. I love that kind of stuff. And I know I've definitely heard you saying like you love the training, like the grind. But yeah, I'm definitely more, I love the aerobic stuff, but I definitely understand that there's a time and place and importance for the speed stuff.
For sure. And when you can nail a long run or you can nail a tempo and you really get in that zone, then yeah, I think that's a great feeling as well. So I don't want to hate on it too much, because you know, you do a long tempo and you're just cruising along with people next to you, then that's a great feeling.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So I guess relating to that, like training and everything, I mean, I kind of asked it, but I'm curious if we could go more specific. What would you say your favorite workout is?
I would say I get asked this question sometimes, and it's always tough because it's like your favorite workout's normally the one that you crush, and in the moment that could be something different. But I think favorite in general workout, we do this like 4x4x300 workout, so like 4 sets of 4x300, and the goal is to like progressively get faster each set. So we start off like a little slower than race pace, and then by the last set, you're getting faster than race pace. And I think that's a fun one, because it gives you a good gauge of where you're at and like what your fitness is like. And then it's also speed, so it's a little more fun with like short rest.
Yeah, I love the workouts when you can get like get the stimulus in, get all the hard work in, but also just like the thing that gives you confidence and like just like good momentum going into races,
Yeah, for sure. It's nice. We do a lot of these workouts like year after year. And so when you can see yourself progressing, or maybe you run faster than the year before, and you know, the year before you were in 3:35 shape, you know, you do a workout that's much better at the same time, and you're like, all right, I think I'm faster now. So it gives you confidence for sure.
Yeah. I feel like all runners are just, we love looking at like the stats and everything. So I definitely find myself just going on my watch or like the Garmin app and just like looking at stuff from like my freshman year and like, oh, okay. And then my sophomore year. Yeah. It's
especially in high school, it's such a crazy progression. I'm sure like you can PR in a race by 30 seconds. And so I'm sure your workouts are just like light years better now.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But yeah, that's the unique thing about running. It's so stats based where you could, I mean, it's like, it's a mix of both. You don't want to be obsessed with the stats, obviously, because like, there's so many different variables there, and sometimes it just get to go off feel. I'm sure like you've had a lot of experience with that. Also stats can also help a lot, and your training at a very scientific level. It's for interesting. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. With all things, it's like, it's good in moderation. You don't want to become obsessed with your heart rate or your cadence or whatever it is. And I personally, I like to go off feel a lot, and that's what Danny does with us more than he does stats. Like, we'll wear heart rate monitors and things like that, and he'll look at that data. But personally, he just like will tell you, okay, today's workout's a 7 out of 10. And so once you get to the point of being a pro runner, hopefully you've kind of figured out what a 7 out of 10 workout feels like for you. And so we're hitting those, and people are really good at judging their effort levels. So if you listen to yourself, and you know, a lot of it can be hard because you want to compete with your teammates, but if you're honest with yourself about where you're at, then it's a very effective way to train and get better.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. It's funny that you said that though. Like once you get to be a pro runner, like you know what a 7 out of 10 is, because like whenever my coach is like 85% or something, like I mean I can like think about it like mathematically, but like I don't know what the difference between 85% and 90% is.
That's kind of splitting hairs at that point where it's like, yeah, Daniel will be like, all right, this is 95. I'm like, all right, 95 is pretty much 100. But yeah, 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10, you know, those are, you can kind of tell the difference between one or the other.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And that's I'm not sure if you've heard about like Jacob Ingebrigtsen's training, like they do the lactate threshold training where they take blood samples and things like that. And that's kind of what Danny's getting after with saying, all right, go 7 out of 10. Like he's trying to get you to a certain level of lactate threshold without doing like all the tests, because it just is not really feasible with the whole team. So yeah. That's the importance of being honest with yourself and knowing where your limits are, because you're trying to push that level like just slightly higher, not blow past it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, running, the training aspect, racing is cool, and I like training so much, and I know you do too. You love the grind. I've heard you saying that in a podcast, but training is just like, there's so many variables that you can play with. Like a lot of times during summer training, I'm thinking about, all right, how do I want to structure like this month of training? And it's fun. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but training is fun. Racing is obviously fun, but training is exciting.
I would say I live for the racing, but the training you have to enjoy, because that's what you're doing 99% of the time. If you just want to race, then I at this point as a pro, I race like maybe 6 or 7 times a season, a couple over that. And obviously you did more when I was in high school and college, but now it's like, I've really had to dig into the fact that, you know, I need to love the grind of training more and just understand it and have fun.
Yeah. Are you guys like big time trial teams? Like, I know you guys do like some like longer time trials, but do you time trial a lot in the season? Like a lot of those?
Not really. We don't time trial too much in the season. We'll do it at the beginning of the season. And Danny calls it like a KPI, like a key performance indicator. Okay. And so, right before we go away for Christmas break, we'll do a big time trial where we kind of treat it like a race just to kind of gauge where we're at. Then maybe we'll do like more of a low key time trial some point during like this kind of transitory period between indoor and outdoors. But no, we're not like setting up legit events and things like that or doing it too often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I guess on to racing now. I know, I can tell on your Instagram captions that, like, you have, like, every race has, like, its purpose. And I think after USA's, like, you talked about, like, momentum and how, like, that's what you got out of the race. And, like, some races, it's just about trusting the process. And if it's not, like, the result you want, it just trusting your training, trusting the work that you've done. Can you talk about, like, your mentality regarding trusting the process and, like, I know, like, for me personally, like, I sometimes feel like my training is spot on, and then I don't run the race that I want to. So it's kind of hard to go back looking at over the training and thinking about where I went wrong. But I know that mentality is super important. So how do you channel that in your running?
Yeah, for me, I'm lucky enough for my whole career to have had coaches that I really trust their training program. So when I was in high school, I had a great coach named Laddie. College, I had Pete Watson. Now I have Danny, where it's like I buy into the program. And I think it's really important to do that, because in my experience and seeing so many different runners through high school to being a pro, there's hundreds of ways to get people to the same time in a race, but training differs for everybody. So you can't really cherry pick one, you know, one aspect of one coach's training program versus, and then put another one that maybe you want to do as well. It's kind of like when they build something, they do everything intentionally, or you at least hope that your coach is doing things intentionally. And so for me, right now with Danny, it's good because I've had, even this season, at the beginning of the season, I was training really well, felt like I was in great shape, went to Millrose and just ran 4:03, which is obviously a terrible time for me personally. And like any racer, I was really pissed off and I was sending him like text messages, like being like, you know, cursing and being like, what the hell's happening? Like all these kind of things. And he's the one who's a little more removed and he's not quite as emotional. And he's like, all right, relax. Like things are going to go well. Like you just have to trust me. Well, I went into that race a bit tired. So the next week I took a kind of a down week and relaxed a little bit and then bounced back, ran like 3:40, which, you know, maybe it's like a 3:56 equivalent. So it's a good progression. And then from that race, my intention in that one was just to go out and run hard. And I led a lot of the race and, you know, kicked hard and I didn't win that one, but still, I got out of it what I wanted. And then when I went to USA is like, that was, these are all separated by 2 weeks. So it was like Millrose, then it was the Lilac Grand Prix 2 weeks later, and then USA's. And so I had seen my bounce from Millrose to the Lilac. And then I was like, all right, I've had 2 more weeks of training. I'm ready to go. Now my only goal right now is to run well and, you know, try to win this race. And so getting third was great. And that built momentum into outdoors. And now I know that I'm in good shape and I can build off of that.
For sure. Yeah, I think momentum is definitely one of the biggest like forces that you can really advantage, like get a lot from in like the sport. Just whether it's in training, like just string good weeks on good weeks and months and like years of good training, or just get it, like, I like how like you were saying, like this race you wanted to get out hard, this race you wanted to like test to see what you could do, like learning something from each race. And yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah, even the bad ones can teach you a lesson, so it's not all lost if you have a bad race.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So for your USA race, I watched that live. What was your like plan going in, and do you think that like you achieved what you wanted to do? I know it was like super competitive. It was a very exciting race and everything. So can you talk a little bit about that race and how you went about it?
Yeah. So I went into that race and I'll be honest, like I was pretty nervous for it because like I said, the season hadn't quite gone as well as I'd wanted to. I was still building and I knew that personally our focus is for outdoors. But at the time, obviously when you go to USA's, you want to race well. So I kind of went in and I was like, I don't really know where I'm at. I think I'm in a good place. I'm ready to race. Like, so I'm really just going to go for it. I have nothing to lose. I knew I didn't have the standard. And so I talked to Danny before the race. I'm like, all right, I'm not going to do anything stupid to try to get the standard or try to push it too hard. I'm just going to race and see what happens. Obviously, it's a little disappointing when you finish and you're 0.6 from going and making the team. But I have to live with that because that was the plan all along. And so I really went into that one and I just wanted to have a good race and put myself in a place or position where I had the potential to win. And so I think I did that. I was up on Josh Thompson's shoulder with 200 meters to go and we were kind of just kicking next to each other. Obviously Hawker came by the end with that big kick of his, but I was proud of how I raced my race. And, you know, we've said it a few times, but that just helps with the momentum. And so it just goes to show that I can trust the process and going forward, it's just going to be about racing and going for wins.
Yeah. Was the standard thing, did you have to get the standard in that indoor, in this indoor season? Was that like the rule that they put?
Yeah, you had to get it this indoor season. And obviously I had a bad race at Millrose and then the second race I did well, but it just wasn't that fast. And then at the trials, I missed it by 0.6 seconds. So it's like very close and I'm not kicking myself for it because I did everything I wanted to in that one. Obviously it's a little disappointing to see like somebody who got behind me in the US champs go to the race, but I'm happy that they get the opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very admirable. Like I went on Instagram, and like I logged on like 2 weeks, I think after like the USA race and I was like, oh wow, this, very interesting and like cool perspective that you're taking from it. And yeah, we've talked about it before, but yeah, it's all about that like momentum going into outdoor with all the big goals I'm sure that you have.
Yeah, it's like the entire year is focused on going to Eugene for the World Championships, and so I've keeping my eye on the prize. And I'm, you know, I would say we have a lot of meetings with our team, and Danny does, you know, he wants us to think about our intentions for the season, and so he had everybody come up with a keyword where, you know, what they wanted to define their season with, and mine was driven. So my drive is to make that World Championship team and be competing at the World Champ Final, and everything that I've done so far is a stepping stone.
Yeah, let's go. It's getting me hyped right now.
It gets me excited too.
Yeah. And so I was listening to, I think the last podcast that Dave and Josh did, and Josh mentioned that you're really being like a student of the sport lately, and you're asking a lot of questions and you're watching a lot of races. And I find that very interesting because I feel like I subconsciously do that when I'm just scrolling through YouTube and just looking at races, looking at the tactics, following where the leader went and like all the things that they're doing. And he talked about how this has really been helping with like developing your instincts and your tactics, which are a key part of championship racing. Can you talk about like how you're trying to implement that like learning aspect into your racing?
Yeah, personally, I just love track. So when I'm on YouTube, a track race pops up and I watch it. I'm not always really thinking, oh, I'm going to learn something from this one. But I think over time, the more you watch and the more you see these great racers and great past races, it kind of just soaks in. And so when you're in a race yourself, you're instinctively doing things that you've seen other successful people do in the past. And so I think that's one big thing. And also, you know, I might be a pro runner, but I know that I have a lot to learn. Like I know I have a lot to learn. There's people that can teach me things. Like all of my teammates have different strengths and different weaknesses that I can learn from. And so, you know, a guy like Josh, he has one of the best mindsets that I've ever seen in a racer, even just like a competitor. And so that's something that I really have been trying to get for myself. I don't want to say copy, but the kind of copy where, you know, he has these great mindset. He's always confident. He goes into races with these goals and he normally nails them. So that's one big thing that I learned from him. Other people I learn, you know, different things from. So I don't want to think I might be an expert a little bit just because I've done this for so long, but you know, I don't think anybody can ever stop learning if they really want to improve.
Yeah. There's always room to learn and improve. Yeah, relating to that, for like in practices, do you guys ever like simulate like the tactics and all that, like getting boxed in and like, or even if that's not like the intention of the workout, do you ever think about that? Like, because I'm sure you have a bunch of guys around you when you're running, just to try to get out of those like sticky situations.
I think about that actually a lot in practice, where if we're doing like a faster rep, I position myself where I want to ideally be in a race. So instead of being like right on the rail, like if we're doing a fast 400, I might position myself on somebody's outside shoulder where, you know, that's not the shortest line. That's not the tangent to be fastest, but that's where realistically you want to be in a race. You want to be ready to make a move and not in a position where you might get boxed in. And then Danny even simulates races for us in the structures of his workout where he'll do like pace change workouts where we'll do a 600 and we'll go out in 27 for the first 200, then we'll slow down and then we'll pick it back up, or we'll go out fast or slow and then we'll pick it up, and just things like that. So you're practicing changing gears, because in a race it really happens pretty quickly and you just have to instinctively switch to the next gear.
Oh yeah, that's so important, just practicing that in training. So you're just developing the instincts and you know what to do. You don't even have to think about it. I think I tried that in my workout like earlier this week, where I went out like in a pack and like sat way in the back purposely just to like see how I could maneuver. And like I kicked hard in the last 200. We were doing like 400s.
That's good. If you have some intention, you go into it and you're like, all right, I'm going to practice, you know, being in the back of the pack. Then when you find yourself at the back of the pack in a race, or if you do, you're like, okay, I've been here before. I know what to do.
Yeah. The thing is, like, I feel like whenever I do that, it's like it works well, but I personally find I think so much in my races, like probably too much. Like, I'm trying to improve it, and I know you're talking about like the instincts and just like, all right, this happens, you have a response to it. How do you go about that? Like, because whenever a gap opens up, I think about that. I'm like, all right, what can I do? And I feel like it sometimes can just be too much thinking that it hinders my performance. So, when you're actually running the race, I know obviously you're focusing on like the what's going on, but what's actually going through your mind?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes with experience. You know, I've raced, I don't even know how many times in my life. It'd be cool to know that stat. But for me, in a race, I'm really just thinking about my positioning. I'm trying to like stay relaxed, stay calm, make like just kind of doing a checklist on my body. Like, all right, breathing's going well, like arms are swinging, like things like that. So it's not so much like, oh, I need to be here or there, but I am focusing and paying attention to the people in front of me. So if like a gap forms, like, so say there's a person in front of me and then the gap forms there, I need to like get around that person immediately rather than like, you know, think about it for half a second. And in that half a second, they can open up a 4 meter gap or something like that. So for me, like that was one of the things I was proud of in my US race. If you go back and watch that, is like there was a few times where there was somebody who started falling off and like just immediately got around them. And so I want to bring that with me into all my races. Like just the second that happens, you jump on it. You don't really think about it. And another thing I've done a lot in the past is like visualization. So before I go to a lot of my races, especially my big championship ones, I visualize what I want to happen. I visualize what might happen. I do like negative visualization where I think about the bad things that can happen, like if somebody falls or if my shoe comes off. And so if any of these scenarios occur in the race, then I'm ready for it. It's not like out of the blue.
Yeah, that's so important. Yeah, I find myself visualizing a lot. I heard this in another podcast and I actually never thought about this, but do you visualize in first person or like third person, like you're seeing yourself from like a spectator's point?
Yeah, I think I've always visualized in first person. I don't think I think it's just a natural thing. I know some people do it differently, but it's definitely beneficial. Like a great example from my season last year is in the beginning of the season, I was in a race where I kind of got tangled up on the start line, pushed around, like found myself in the back of the pack, and that was a race where I really wanted to run fast. So I freaked out. I ended up running like a 151 first 800 and then just dying and, you know, obviously not doing well in the race. And so I thought about that for the rest of the season going in, especially going into the Olympic trials. I was like, if something like this happens that messes me up, I need to stay relaxed. And so it's good I did that, because actually in the trials, I got tripped up in the semis and almost fell on the ground. Like my face ended up like this far off the ground, but I was able to catch myself. And my heart rate spiked and I started like, you know, obviously all the adrenaline gets rushing. And so in that moment, I had already thought about this happening. And so I said, all right, just calm down. I just took a couple deep breaths, got in the pack and kept going and made it through to the final. So that was a great example of it actually paying off.
Yeah, definitely. And I can already tell it's probably just so many years of racing and like being in the sport, it's just probably culminated to like develop this. It's not something I could just like implement directly. Like it takes time, and it's cool how you've like augmented and like just changed the way you go about races, and you've improved all these years. Super cool. Yeah.
Anybody like your age in high school, it's hard to, you know, I'd say I've probably seen it all in races, or I've experienced it all. I can't imagine too many scenarios that I haven't had happen to me, but somebody like you who's just starting off and just experiencing different things, something might catch you off guard. And the good thing is, even if it messes up your race or it causes you to not do well, don't just like forget about it. Remember that exact moment and what you could have done to do better in the future.
Yeah, definitely. And unlike professional running, we're racing like two times a week sometimes, so
yeah.
always keep just implementing what you learned last week into the next race.
Yeah, there's a lot of good chances to practice racing for you guys.
Yeah, so sometimes I feel like too many, like you want to get that uninterrupted training in, but yeah, you know, there are pros and cons to everything.
Yeah, you gotta roll with the punches. I raced twice a week in high school and did like four races every meet, and so it was like I thought of it as racing myself into shape, and I think it worked out, but it definitely was overwhelming at times.
Yeah. So I guess transitioning to just wrapping things up, actually, what's next on the race schedule? What are you like getting excited about? I'm super excited for like the trials coming up, or they're not called trials, right? It just
USA. Yeah, just the US champs, I guess, but they're a team trial. So team trial,
yeah. Yeah, super excited for that. We're definitely rooting for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and hyped about the driven thing.
Yeah.
I'll probably do a double on the treadmill and put that in front, or put my own word, we'll see, in front of the treadmill.
Yeah, come up with your own word and just, you know, have that be your motto for the year. I think it's helped me a lot, honestly, where it's like my actions are, you know, I think of myself as just driven. All my actions are going to one specific goal.
Yeah, that's exciting.
And to answer your other question, you know, for me coming up, I've got altitude camp coming up here in a few weeks. I'm going to go back to Albuquerque. We have a long one, I think about 7 or 8 weeks, so put in a lot of good work there. And then I'm opening up the season May 6th at one of the Sound running races. I'm actually going to do a 5K. Test out a little longer distance. And then from then on out, hopefully, you know, I might be going to Mount Sac for the 1500 there. You know, trying to get into pre as always. That's always a great opportunity if you can do it. And then some other races like Portland Track down the road, and obviously gearing up for the US champs and making the team in Eugene.
Very, very exciting. And yeah, for that 5K, got that UVA strength. So
I know I'm ready for it. I gotta show these guys on my team what I'm made of. Because we normally do this, it's kind of a fun off event and we all compete. And so it'll be like probably me, Dave, Isaac, Josh in this 5K. And it's like it's a good way to bust each other's balls and get after it.
yeah, for sure. It's fun racing those off events. But yeah, overall, thank you so much for joining the episode today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I remember I texted you, or I DM'd you on Instagram like a few years ago when you ran that 351. I was like, oh my gosh, you responded. Because that's when I was just like first getting into the sport as like a freshman. And I was like, oh my gosh.
awesome.
Yeah, it's funny, but it's so cool with the sport. Everyone's so accessible and like the community is very close. So yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. And I always say, like, especially young guys and girls like you, like, reach out to the pros that you like and ask them a question. A lot of us will respond and, you know, hopefully can help with whatever you want, or just say hi.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Thank you, man.
All right, thanks for having me.